Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Now with McDonald's, wake up to a $4 breakfast meal deal. Wake up to a sausage McMuffin or a sausage biscuit to hash browns and wake up to a hot coffee. Get your $4 breakfast meal deal.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, which today is Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators are in action tonight, taking on the red-hot Vancouver Canucks. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. All of your pregame coverage starting right here on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game at 6 p.m. Joining us now is Mitch Light, who covers college football for The Athletic. Now, Mitch, we had a funky week last week, Titans on Monday Night Football, so we weren't able to catch up with you last week, but I will take this opportunity to take my Heisman Trophy victory lap. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm ready to move on to next year. I was fully ready to talk about it last Tuesday, and then Willie gave me the news that my services were not needed. So I've already looked at my last next year's contender. So, you know, I choose to look forward, Caroline.
Your services were very much so missed last week, Mitch.
Congratulations. I did Thank vote you. For Jaden Daniels.
As All right. Ah, all right. All okay. right.
I think yeah, man. You knew exactly what to say when Caroline yeah.
You think I was going to come here and say I voted for like someone else? But we do that straw poll at The Athletic every week, and starting midseason. And I had Michael Penix Jr. kind of on mine most weeks. And I figured that as long as those two teams kept winning, and it's not just about winning, that I would, the winner of the Pac-12 championship game, you know, I'd probably vote for that quarterback for the Heisman. But then, you know, two or three weeks in, just sort of had an epiphany, like a lot of voters did, I think, that, wow, I did not realize just how eye-popping the stats were for Jaden Daniels. And he was doing it on a good team and not a great team, and we all know the defense wasn't his issue. But it's like his passing stats by themselves were amazing, and then he rushed for 1,200 yards or whatever it was. So it was truly statistically one of the best seasons we've seen from a quarterback.
It just makes it even more sad that the defense was just that bad. But I digress, Mitch.
You can't have it all, Caroline. You can't have it all.
I did have it all for that one year, man. Oh man, that was fun. That was fun. Looking at Tennessee, we haven't heard quite yet if Joe Milton will be playing in the bowl game against Iowa, which, side note, that matchup between Tennessee and Iowa, I think, is hilarious. But no word yet if Joe Milton is going to play in that game. What do you think is best for Joe Milton, and what do you think is best for Tennessee fans or maybe that Tennessee team in developing Nico for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, it was usually I'm not a radio person in the morning, work from home, but this we're having car trouble, so we're down to one car. So I had to drive my wife to school today. She's a teacher, so I was driving home and, of course, listening to Joe Rexroad on the radio, as one does when they're in the car. And Joe was making the point that if he were Joe Milton's advisor, you know, Iowa's not the best defense to play against in the bowl game. And I understand what Joe was saying, but I was thinking to myself, if you're scared of going against Iowa's defense in the bowl game, like, what does that say about your prospects as an NFL quarterback? And it's maybe not Joe Milton making the decision, and Iowa clearly has one of the best defenses in the country. I'm not sure if they rank first, second, or third. I'm not sure. I get why he wouldn't play. For Tennessee's standpoint, you probably want to see Nico play. You know, it's still a difficult defense to go against. But it's some nice experience. You get all the preps as QB1 leading up to it. I'm sure he's getting a lot of practice reps anyway. So here's a scenario where the bowl game is interesting for the fan base when a lot of them have kind of checked out because they might have a chance to see the young quarterback play. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen there. But my guess is Joe Milton will not play.
Now, Mitch, do you think that Day's job, is he on a hot seat? Because this would be, what, the third year in a row that they've lost to Michigan. And, you know, this of any year should have been the year that Ohio State was going to beat Michigan. It seemed like they beefed up their defense. They became more physical, but yet still, it was a close game, but they still didn't beat Michigan. And we've seen another, you know, Ohio State coach years prior get fired for the same thing. Can't beat Michigan.
It's sort of like the definition of hot seat. Like, well, first of all, I think they're going to beat Michigan next year. I think Michigan loses a ton of players. They lose a lot of seniors. And so I think Ohio State, depending on who they have at quarterback, it's going to be well-positioned in that game. Like, so here's the way I look at it. Like, I don't think he's on the hot seat right now. I know he's lost those games, and you're hired at Ohio State to win those games. It's almost like if he doesn't win next year, especially if Michigan's not as talented, it's just like it's almost maybe time for like an amicable divorce on all sides. It's just it might get too toxic. And so you might say, okay, then he's on the hot seat, he's going to get fired. But like if I'm Ryan Day and I lose to Michigan for a fourth straight time, and like do I really want to like subject myself to all of that ire from the fan base? So it's obviously an important year. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I know the schedule is not going to be similar. That's, you know, we none of us really like the realignment we're seeing, but when it's actually time for the games next year, we're gonna enjoy them. My point is, like, it's the past couple of years we've had to wait. They played Notre Dame, but other than that, we've had to wait basically 2 months for their big games on the schedule. Well, their schedule is going to be more difficult next year. There's going to be bigger tests early in the season, so it's not going to boil down to like a two-game season like it's been. But it's definitely going to be one of the storylines to watch starting next year.
Mitch, have you even thought about next year's realignment, one, but then also the playoff picture and how teams will be, how they're going to sort of stack teams in the playoffs? Have you even thought about that moving forward? Because, I mean, there's going to be a lot of change in a lot of teams. There may be teams that ends up getting into the playoffs, you know, with two, maybe even three losses. Have you even thought about what it will look like next year?
Sure. It's hard not to, like, watch games this year and look ahead next year. Like, I think the example we and everyone who kind of follows the sport, like, Penn State is, like, the poster child for a team that will benefit, or if it had been a 12-team playoff the past 6-7 years, would benefit. They would have made it, like, 3 or 4 times. They've come close a couple years, but they just haven't made it. So I think teams like Penn State, it's going to benefit them, although their schedule will also get more difficult. And just thinking through this, it's going to be with the elite teams knowing that it's not such life or death with one game, and I don't know if this is going to happen, but like, let's say you got a banged up quarterback. In years past, you know, you might need to play him because you can't afford to lose that game. But if you're Ohio State, maybe, you know, you can get in with two losses, so each game's not as important. So I think we're going to see some of that, but it's definitely going to be different. I'm in favor of the 12-team playoff. I do appreciate the arguments about the, you know, diminishing the importance of the regular season for some teams. But I think those playoff buys are going to be so important too. The four teams not having to play that one game. So, you know, there still is a lot of pressure on those elite teams to have zero losses or one loss. And one thing I think we're going to see, too, is the fan bases of those teams that get the buys, they're going to love it, but they're going to miss a home game, like the teams 5 through 8. I think that's going to be great, that first round with playoff games on campuses. Like, imagine a playoff game at Penn State in December when it's, like, you know, 12 degrees and stuff. Some of those games are going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Now, does it take away the luster of the championship game, in-conference championship game?
It might, and it will in some regards. There's going to be certain scenarios where they're just not as important. And we've seen that a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, this year was a little different. The championship games were of paramount importance. The Washington-Oregon game was basically a play-in game for the playoffs, so that was great. It turned out that Georgia-Alabama was a play-in game. So it will, but I also think, like I just said, Derek, you know, for those teams fighting for a bye game, for a bye it's in the playoff, it's going to be huge too. So everyone, especially in the SEC and the Big Ten, everyone wants to win a championship. So the stakes might not be quite as high, but when we're settling in to watch those games on Championship Saturday next year, you know, I'll enjoy them just as much.
Mitch Light is with us. Mitch, it's just we've been talking about this every time you come on, but the carousel of the quarterbacks, and it just doesn't it say so much that even Georgia had to wait and see if their quarterback was going to stay, and obviously he has, and he is eligible, I guess, for the draft, so that was part of the equation here. But it's amazing where you just don't know who's going where. So let's talk about a couple of guys. First, let's talk about the guy that Vanderbilt, it looks like they're honing in on to be their starter. Tell me about him.
Yeah, well, Nate Johnson committed from University of Utah, Southern California native, just finished his second year at Utah, was a top 300 or maybe top 250 national recruit. So he was a big-time recruit for Utah. And I remember we did a story, Bruce Feldman did a story on him from a camp that I edited a couple years ago. So it's sort of like, you know, I remember that story. So you know, that's one thing I really enjoy about covering recruiting like I do now. I get to know these guys younger, and then when they get to college, I kind of know a lot about them. And he was a guy that, you know, they've had Cam Rising as their injured, as their starter, but he's been hurt. So Johnson played some, a phenomenal athlete, really, really good runner, still developing as a passer. That's going to be his issue. You know, can he read defenses? He's got the, you know, they say the arm talent to throw the ball, but it's just about deciphering defenses. You know, he played under Andy Ludwig at Utah. And if you remember, you know, this is back when I was doing the sideline reporting for Vanderbilt, and I, you know, paid obviously close attention. When they went to Kyle Shermer as a true freshman, I remember just they really did not, or Andy Ludwig did not trust him to do much. So they, Ralph Webb was on the team that year. I think they ran the ball a lot. Early in that next year, sophomore year, very, very conservative. And then the kind of the light bulb went on. I think it was the game at Auburn one year, and they just let Shermer go. And then the next 2.5 years, he threw the ball all over the place. So when I was watching Nate Johnson play for Andy Ludwig this year as a redshirt freshman, I'm thinking there's a guy that the coordinator doesn't trust yet. They didn't really have him throw the ball a lot. So that'll be, you know, his task at Vanderbilt, getting more comfortable in the offense. You know, new offense coordinator has not been announced yet, but Tim Beck from New Mexico State, they had a dual-threat quarterback last year. Diego Pavia rushed for over 800 yards, I believe. So it seems to be a really good fit for what they want to run going forward.
How would you assess what's gone on overall? I know a lot of people that the Vanderbilt fans were excited about the future for have decided to hit the portal, but there's a lot of opportunities. I see a lot of names coming in. Any sense of whether they're, you know, stabilizing some? There's obviously a lot of opportunity out there, and, you know, they've got a lot of spots to fill, but how are they doing?
Yeah, I think it's been a positive last few good days. I think, obviously, from a net gains and losses, it's still at a net deficit. I mean, you know, London Humphrey's just committed to Georgia, obviously. So they lost some key guys. I think getting Taylor back on defense, you know, probably their best player, was very important there too. So there's still a long time to go in the portal. You know, guys have until January 2nd, I think the date is, to enter the portal, but they can commit any time after that. And then you've got the spring window. But the program is clearly, by necessity, is clearly signaled that they're going to use the transfer portal. So I think it's been a positive few days. Getting the quarterback that they wanted or that they pursued was a huge first step. Because if you don't have a quarterback, you really got no chance. So they just
and the quarterback could probably lead to other players. Like, oh, they've got a quarterback that looks good. I'll go there.
Yeah, and I looked this up for something else I was doing. And I don't know how this compares to other programs, but in Clark Lee's 3 years, Vanderbilt has not had a quarterback start more than 6 straight games. You know, some of that's due to injury, but some of that's due to lack of consistency and stuff. You need stability at that position. Hey, Caroline, what do you think about
Shermer? Think about what Shermer did to stabilize.
Exactly.
You could argue he saved Derek Mason's tenure. He made Derek Mason somewhat successful because he had a stable guy like Shermer that came up and played so well.
Yeah.
No doubt. Have we gotten Caroline's thoughts, deep thoughts on A.J.
Well,
Swan?
Well, I did happen to get a text from Caroline last night letting me know that A.J. Swan is heading to LSU.
Yes.
You know,
that was a change. Everyone thought he was going to South Carolina there. So, interesting. I not just because he played at Vanderbilt, guys, but I think he is one of the more interesting portal guys because he clearly has talent. He makes some great throws, but he makes some bad decisions. Mm-hmm. And some people say, oh, well, the talent around him. Clearly, the offensive line wasn't great, but he had good wide receivers at Vanderbilt this year. He made some throws where you're just like, what are you doing? So I hope it works out for him. He clearly has talent. I know he's got a bat. It's not like he's getting close to guaranteed a starting spot there. But I think he punched up or whatever the term is. I did not think he would land at a program like LSU.
Not on my bingo card, I'll tell you that.
Interesting. I got one more for you, Mitch, and then these guys might want to sneak in a last one. But Chip Kelly had some very compelling – comments about his vision, and he made the point that is so obvious to everybody, and that is, he goes, our football team playing in the Big Ten is one thing, but our softball team, our baseball team, they should be playing Arizona and Arizona State. This makes no sense at all. And he laid out a really interesting plan in about 90 seconds of what you could do, which would basically be a football-only division, and then everybody else do something that makes more sense geographically.
Yeah.
So what your thoughts on that? Do you think people will listen to him?
I mean, it's not an original thought. It's good to hear kind of a prominent voice like that. He did so succinctly. But, if you heard it, he kept saying, not that I thought about this.
He
kept saying that. Like, I've in the past few years, this is what I thought. It's like football is a different animal. It's a different sport. There are so many logistical hurdles. You know, there's Title IX involved in that. Like, how do you know, volleyball teams afford to do that? But, you know, if football is something different, but if it's still sponsored by the school, then obviously they still have that revenue there. So I am in favor of football breaking off because it's, you know, we've written stories, we've done a lot about, oh, UCLA's got to go play at Rutgers, ha-ha, like in football, that's a pain, how do you get the equipment there? But, you know, you've traveled with the football team, Willie. I have to, you know, it's pretty good travel. And you know, if you do it two or three times a year,
football
you
is
get
a
over
totally
it.
Different thing.
Yeah.
It's the other sports. It's Stanford basketball going to play at Miami, at Florida State, and at Clemson, you know, gone for a week there. So I don't know if we'll get there, but I thought Chip Kelly, that those were wise words, and the more people say it, I guess, the more chance it has of coming to fruition at some point.
But that just shows you football reigns supreme. It's like we're making decisions based upon our football program and no one else. That's basically what it's saying to everybody.
Money.
It is the thing. It's what I mean, I've said this. It's with all this realignment stuff, it's one of those things where everyone involved knows it's a bad idea, but we can't stop ourselves, and it just happens.
Mitch, last one for me. I kind of viewed this era of transfer portal NIL like the rich getting richer. But I look at programs like Texas A&M that are losing players to the transfer portal at an alarming rate. Ohio State lost Kyle McCord and several other of their starters. And big programs across the country, there are a lot of players that are entering the transfer portal, and it's more than just natural attrition. And then I look at programs like Ole Miss that are sweeping up in the transfer portal. That might land Walter Nolan, the number one defensive player in the country. Look at Missouri recruiting in high school and in the transfer portal, getting some of the top players in the country. I don't look at Ole Miss and Missouri as some of the richest teams in all of college football. So could this really be giving college football the parity that maybe we've been looking for over the last, you know, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, very good point. And the same teams are still at the top of the recruiting rankings, but that's okay as long as they're not hoarding as much of the talent. There was like a 4 or 5 year run there where like Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, and whatever, we're getting like literally like 50 or 60 of the top 100 players, like those five schools. It just needs to be spread out a little bit more. And that's what maybe, you know, two top 75 guys going to Missouri when they would have been going to Georgia. You know, some other schools getting kids as well. That will help. You know, I don't know if we'll ever get to parity, but just every kid who doesn't go to Georgia or doesn't go to Alabama and goes to a rival school will help. But then also, like, Ole Miss is the perfect example. They are not a powerhouse recruiting school. They don't recruit in the higher than the 20s, but they've done a very, very good job in the transfer portal, especially this year. They are making a go for it. You probably talked about it. You've seen their schedule. Mm-hmm. If they can stay healthy next year and everything molds the way they think it can, they can make a real run for it. So, yes, I'm with you too, Caroline. Like, I thought NIL, okay, same teams are just going to get richer. They're going to dominate even more. We have not seen that. How far it swings the other way, we still don't know.
Are you looking forward to the Pop-Tart Bowl coming up here in just a couple of days, Mitch?
Of course.
Residence Technologies Independence Bowl, perhaps?
I'm looking at the bowl slate here, and there are games coming up. That's what I'll say.
There are games. The Scooters Coffee Frisco Bowl is tonight, UTSA at Marshall.
Man, why do you got to give it such a long name?
It is. It's like a NASCAR car. Yes. It's like a stock car. You got stickers all over it.
You guys are talking to the person who was at the first ever Garden State Bowl. The first of three.
I have, Mitch, we might have been at the same game as a kid. I have a Navy, I guess, toque is what you would call it in Canada. Just a winter hat, you know, from a Garden State Bowl. Rutgers against Navy, is that right?
Imagine Rutgers in more than one Garden State Bowl. It was 1978 Garden State Bowl, Arizona State, Rutgers. My friend's parents went to Arizona State. They called me about an hour. My parents, about a half hour before they were leaving, said, "We got an extra ticket. We'll take Mitch as long as he cheers for Arizona State." So I went. I don't think Barry Bonds or Reggie Jackson were playing for Arizona State back then, but I think Arizona State won.
The Garden State Bowl.
I'm sure Arizona State fans were thrilled about going to New Jersey in January.
Oh, yes, that had to be huge. Broadway play?
I know. Here's another bowl. It's already been
played. I can't remember the weather. I'm guessing it wasn't like 75 and sunny. It was probably about 90 and sunny.
Wind swirling in the Meadowlands. No question.
How about the avocados from Mexico Cure Bowl?
Oh, it was a great game. It was a great game. I did watch it the other night.
13-9. There we go.
I like avocados.
Who doesn't?
Good for you. Super food.
Everybody does.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Healthy fats. Mitch Light covers college football for The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you as always. Glad to get you back this week, and we'll chat with you soon.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, appreciate it. Mitch Light, he is the very best. Appreciate him for joining us as he does every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Coming up next, it's been too long. We got to talk about the red freaking hot Predators, 13-3-0 in their last 16. What's been the key for the Preds, and how do they continue that against a really, really good Vancouver team tonight? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
13 out of 16 for you guys. What have you liked the most about your group during the stretch?
I've liked my group the whole year. We didn't get a lot of the what I thought rewards were early. Proud of them for staying resilient through that stretch, because it's hard when you're 5-10 and you feel you played good hockey and you weren't getting the results that you wanted. It's easy to go the other way. I think we stuck together. We stayed connected. We believed that we were better than our record was showing, and we went on a nice little run. But it's in our business, it's day to day. It was good to get this weekend. It was a big weekend for us. I think in the NHL right now, it's kind of a moving time. These holiday games and the stretch of games is really to test your concentration level. There's so much going around. And tonight, on a Saturday night, in a back-to-back, I thought we played a solid game. It wasn't perfect, but it was enough.
The Nashville Predators continue their hot streak. They've won 4 in a row, 13-3-0. In their last 16, the Preds now, according to MoneyPuck.com, which I've been living on this website, 38.7% chance of making the playoffs, sitting in fourth place in the Central Division.
Wait, what is the percentage?
38.7, which is lower than I thought.
Wow.
That can't be right. Is that for, that can't be for
to make getting
38.7% chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah,
that sounds very low.
It sounds low. It does.
I was hoping you were going to tell me better news than that.
I'm sorry.
50%, man. Come on. The way they've been playing.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Oh, well, whatever.
But we know. I mean, Preds' chance of making the playoffs last year went from like 60-something percent to like 0.7%.
Yeah, and at this point in the season, really, it's not something I check. Now, I think in the last month where you start to look at, it's not necessarily where the percentage is on a given day. It's more of what do you have to do. What does your record need to be to get in there? Like, can you play 500 the rest of the year and have a good shot, right? Or do you have to win 75 or 80% of your games to get in? Or can you? What if you lost the rest of your games? If you're looking at worst-case scenario, the sky is falling. Could you lose the rest of your games and still get in? Like, these are the things that I think become more relevant when there's probably 15 to 20 games to go in the season. But either way, I think we get the point. They've gone from 5-10, which is what the reference point that Andrew Burnett was talking about in that clip, to where they are now. And his answer to me is pretty interesting in that, right? Is that he was saying, look, I've liked the way the guys have gone about it the whole time in terms of learning the system, getting better at it. And he said, even when we were losing, I saw that we had a chance to do better. We thought we were leaving points on the table. We could have won a lot more of those games, but they stayed with it. And he said, really, that's the thing that's jumped out is, A, they're getting elite goaltending now, but B, they're just learning how to win. They're learning how to manage the game. They're making smarter winning plays, and now the closer games have been going their way instead of coming up short by a goal and having 10 regulation losses in the first 15 games where they're like, wow, we were right in that game. What happened?
How have you seen that come to fruition? Because that's true. That we've seen the Preds go from a team that lost a lot of games that they could have won to now a team that's winning games that doesn't have to play their best brand of hockey in order to win games. They're now finding ways to win games. How have you seen that be? What's the difference?
I think the leadership and just over and over coming into that locker room and having guys who have the right message and are setting the example every day, I think that has helped. And I think it's pulled everybody up. And it kept them from, I think, unraveling when they were 5-10. Because when they were 5-10, that's just it. When you're starting to hear that, well, if you're way out of it in Thanksgiving, that could be it. Mm-hmm. But I think they kind of stayed with it and said, look, if we keep doing the things we're doing, stay with the process here, it'll start going our way. And I think there was always a sense, too, that it's just a matter of time before UC Soros starts getting in the groove. They saw what he did last year. They've seen what he's done the last three or four seasons.
Yeah.
And when you have a guy that is a difference maker like that, by the end of the year, you start seeing that. Now, right now, he's playing about as well as anybody. And how long is that going to go? I mean, he's a pretty consistent guy. But when he really revs it up, it's special. So I don't know how long that's going to last, but you ride that wave as long as you can.
Now, how can a team go from losing a game 4-0 against Toronto and then coming back and beating Carolina in overtime 6-5?
On the road.
Is that what you were – that's what you're talking about in regards to this team and their makeup?
I think that's Andrew Brunette strikes me, too, as a guy that just is very even-keeled. He's always looking at – like today he was asked, hey, why do you think you guys are overachieving? He goes, I don't look at us as an overachieving team. I think we're achieving, mm-hmm. right? He thinks there's more room for improvement. He's always trying to look to the next thing. So if you have a game that doesn't go your way, and I think you tip your hat to Toronto. They played really well in that game. Maybe Nashville wasn't quite as sharp. They played Kevin Lankinen. That was one front end of back-to-back. You move on to the next game. It just stay with the process. And you feel confident that, you have a formula that when everybody is playing into it, you have a chance to win. You're not going to win every game, but if you stick to that formula and everybody's buying in, you should have your share of success over time.
And what I do, like about this team is that they didn't allow this whole Barry thing to distract them. And obviously,
yes.
Barry has, he stayed within, what the team wants him to do. He hasn't been a distracting either.
Tyson Barry.
Yeah. But
too many Barrys in this team.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of Barrys.
Tyson Barry, yes.
First name Barry, last name Barry.
but this team hasn't let, that distract them from anything that they're doing throughout. And usually you see something like that in a young team, and it ultimately starts to become a problem.
I think that's a good point. That I think they handled it professionally.
Exactly.
I don't know what they did mm-hmm. in the interior of the locker room, but again, I think about guys like Yossi, O'Reilly, McDonough, guys who have seen this kind of thing happen before. Andrew Brunette was saying earlier today, he goes, look, I've been there. Mm-hmm. I've been the guy that's been the odd man out. I've been the guy that's mm-hmm. in a contract year. He's been through it all. So when he's talking to the players about it, I think they can respect that he does know how they feel to a point. Even though it's frustrating for them, he said it's my least favorite thing about coaching is when I've got to go to the guy that's sitting out tonight. Like Kiefer Sherwood's ready to play tonight. Mm-hmm. They're going to hold him out for at least one more game. And in some ways, this is a very good problem because you have options. You have good players. Spencer Stastny was playing great when he was up here. They don't have a spot for him right now. But this is good. This is what Barry Trotz is probably sitting there going, yeah, I like the depth. This is what I hope would happen. We got a little competition going here. But in the meantime, you do have to manage a veteran like Tyson Barry, a guy like Dante Fabro right now who's been sitting out. And he's played very, very well when he's been in there. But right now he's the odd man out, and he's got to be patient. But that's where a good locker room, good leadership has to – help out with that. And you got to be a pro.
And the only reason I didn't bring it up as a bad thing. I brought it up as
yeah.
a good thing.
They managed through
this,
it,
yeah,
and they had success
a mature team.
to overcome
even
yeah.
though they have a mix of young and older guys, more younger guys. But this is a mature team. That's why I brought it up. Not mm-hmm. to say that to make it an indictment on Tyson Barry. It's just it was there, and even though it's still maybe there, it's not there. We don't talk about it. You
and
know?
It's, I think it's the reaction that you want because you're not going to eliminate contract talk entirely from a locker room. You're not going to eliminate, quote unquote, outside noise entirely from a locker room. But what you can control is your reaction to it. What you can control is how the team stays focused on what they should do instead of talking about what's going to happen with Tyson Berry, what's going to happen with the contract, what's going to happen with us, so on and so forth. That it's you stay focused because you're not going to eliminate those kind of distractions. Vancouver is a really good team that's coming into Bridgestone Arena tonight. What do you want to see, Willie?
Well, that's another team that I think before the season wasn't one that you were hearing, you know, could win the conference, could be number one in the conference. But they are in that running.
A lot of surprises in the NHL this year.
Good and bad. There have been on both sides of it, no doubt. And they are a team that I think, number one, how are they doing it? The top guys are buying in. It's very much like Nashville, but I think they even have maybe a little bit more star power. If that's like guys like Elias Pettersson has been an unbelievable talent, and he's put numbers up, but they haven't really won. Rick Tocchet has done a very good job. He took over somewhere along the season last year when their season was kind of sunk, and he's built the foundation last year, and man, it's taken off this year. But he's got the top players really buying in. They're all having fantastic years. Guys who were kind of enigmas a little bit, like JT Miller, Brock Besser. Brock Besser at one point asked for a trade last year. He was like, trade me. Now he's got 23 goals. He's at the top. He's on pace for like 59 goals. He's been a good player, but this is the best he's ever played before. And they've got a guy in Quinn Hughes who is a unique talent that has taken a big jump. He's a tremendous defenseman. He's Jack Hughes' brother. There's three Hughes brothers, and they're all really, really terrific players. And Quinn Hughes is playing out in Vancouver. He's not in the Eastern spotlight like his two brothers are in New Jersey. But, man, he might be as good as any of them, the way he controls the game. So in the first two meetings, Quinn Hughes has played brilliant games and I think kind of controlled the action. He has the puck more than anybody. He just has the puck, and you can't get it away. And what does Andrew Brunette always say? We want the puck. We don't have it. We got to get it back. It's really hard to get it from Quinn Hughes. He's such an elusive skater. He can kind of play keep away. He's always been a great passer, but now he's shooting more, so he's added an even bigger level. And for a blue liner for that to emerge, it makes everybody else on the team better. And they're getting great goaltending to go with it. That always helps.
I'm glad you brought up goaltending. Yeah. Because I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think that we are dangerously close to approaching this territory as far as the Preds and Uzi Saros is concerned. And it might be a really good problem to have. And we'll get into that coming up next. Live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena, Caroline Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. DeMays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app, live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators in action, taking on the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pregame coverage starts right here on 102.5, The Game, at 6 p.m. Before the break, I said I think we could be, I don't know if we're there, but I think we could be dangerously approaching, and I don't use dangerous as a bad word, we could be approaching this territory with the Nashville Predators. Willie, you bring up how the Predators are playing motivated, they're playing focused, and it also doesn't hurt that you're getting incredible goaltending from UC Saros. Four of his last five games of save percentage of 9.5 or better, six of the last seven save percentage of 9.5 or better. I mean, you look at game against Montreal, or in Montreal earlier this month, 9.73, 9.7, 9.71 in Buffalo before that. Are we getting to the territory with Uzi Saros of pay him what he wants?
You know, it's a good question. To me, the answer has always been yes. Mm-hmm. I was saying this last year when this was coming up, and it is a trend in the league. It is interesting because I've always equated a top level goalie as the same type of value as a top level quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I asked the question, I think, to Joe and Robbie last year, would you trade a Justin Herbert for a high, you know, to allow an unproven high-end guy like a first-round pick come in? And they were like, is that the same thing? In my mind, it is, but people differ because there is a school of thought in the league right now, and Vegas just proved that it can be done. And I think Colorado proved it could be done the year before that. You can win a championship without an elite goaltender, if you put the right pieces in front of that goaltender, and you set it up for a good goalie to have success. And that's what teams have done, and it's a lot easier to find a good goaltender. But to me, there are only a few elite goaltenders right now, and Juuse Saros is one of them. He's a guy that just makes your whole team better. He erases mistakes that you make. So to me, it's worth paying that guy. The mistake you make is to overpay a good goaltender. But you got to understand when you have a special goalie, and there aren't that many of them. But Saros, to me, is one. Now, one thing we don't know going forward is, can he get on that playoff run that separates everybody forever, right? When you take a like Pekka, we look at him differently because of that run in 2017. He was a great goalie. But that 2017 run made a difference in how he's viewed. You got to have the playoff success. And we haven't seen Saros really have a chance to do that yet, really. It's a small sample size. Let's put it that way. So to me, the answer is yes. The cap is going up. There's more room, I think, to add a bigger salary. And this is something that they'll have to figure out when summer comes around. That's when they can extend him if they choose.
And I think it comes with a caveat, too, of Askarov, of where is he at in his development. If you commit, let's say, 7 years, $10 million a year, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility for Juuse Saros.
That might be a little high, but I mean, it's going to be not far from that,
right?
Right, if that's what you do.
You're essentially saying Juuse Saros is our goaltender of the future, and you've got something to do with Yaroslav Askarov. I don't know if Askarov is necessarily.
Just call him Askey. That's what all the coaches and the GM say. Just call him Askey.
The Milwaukee goaltender, if he's signing up necessarily to be a backup for the next 7 years.
You know, and there's time with that. You have time. He's so young. I have seen a lot of teams, they give too much responsibility to a guy, especially for goalies. It's different for a left winger that you can bring along slowly and play. If he's ready for 8 minutes on a particular night, that's all you give him. If he's ready for a night where you give him 15 minutes, okay. But you kind of feel the game out, and you can shelter him. The goalie can't do that. And so the goalies get better and better if they're patient. And this is where Askarov is going to have to show some patience. Remember, Juuse Saros, remember how long Saros backed up Pekka Rinne? Three, four, five full seasons where, you know, that's what his job was. Askarov, if he shows that kind of patience, I do see a scenario where Askarov you could keep and be the backup, because also analytics and the way they're, you know, studying the positions now, the backup is playing more. The backup needs to play more. It's showing that if you overwork your goalie, and this is going to be true for Saros when he gets into his 30s, I don't think he's going to be able to play 65 games. The way maybe he has, and they've leaned on him.
Right.
You got to get that number down closer to 55 to 60 games. And so that's more opportunity for a guy like Askarov, presumably in the coming years when he's ready. And I still think he's benefiting a lot from playing in Milwaukee. It wouldn't surprise me if they got him up here for a game or two this year to keep him, you know, keep him motivated, keep driving him. He's had a great attitude so far. But I think a lot of people were thinking, and it still could be true, you trade one or the other, right? If you're going to keep Saros, then you would have to, let's see what you can get for Askarov, because he's such a high ceiling prospect. But I think there also is a scenario where you go with the Saros-Rinne thing, and Askarov is the understudy for Saros, right? He can learn a lot. You can, because that's the other thing about Saros. If you're going to invest in him long term, why are you doing it? Because Saros has impeccable work ethic and makeup and attitude. You know he's going to put in the work.
Yeah.
He's not going to just change his ways because he's signed to the next contract. He is absolutely ironclad in the makeup category.
Now, how old is Askarov?
Askarov is only 21.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
And so
he's a baby.
That's very young for a goalie. There are some, like, you take a guy like Carter Hart in Philadelphia, who's having a good year now, but several years ago he was that same age Askarov is now, and they threw him in there. And they said, here's the phenom, he's the guy, and he got off to a good start, and he was playing well, and then the team didn't play well around him. He slumped, and his career took a dip for two or three years. And he's still building back from that, and now Philadelphia's having a great year. We're going to see them on Thursday. But there's ebb and flow. It's hard for a goalie in the early 20s to dominate and be great. There are a couple of guys that have done it, but it's rare. And some guys can crash and burn if they're given too much responsibility at a young age.
And it is interesting, the perspective, how much, at least my own perspective, that's shifted so much with the perspective of the team. Because last year I was saying, look, I'm trade Cesaro. See, we could get for him on the trade market, because the team was in such a different situation that you were selling, that you were trying to accumulate picks. And I looked at it like your greatest asset right now, your most valuable trade asset is UC Soros. So if that's what you want to do, is tear it down, is retool, retrots, whatever you want to call it, then get those picks back. But now you're looking at a team that can be competitive.
And they've already got a lot of picks, right?
They've got the picks. They have the money that's available to spend on UC Soros in the future.
Yes, and I think that's the other part of this equation is it's not like you're sitting there going, we have to replenish the farm system. They've already been doing that the last couple of years, and this is where David Poile deserves some credit there for kind of handing it off to Barry Trotz in a position of strength. When you look at other, like Tampa Bay, they have no prospects. There's several other teams that they've been going for it, and they have depleted the farm system. And so it's going to be tough for them to rebuild when the time comes, and you can't blame them for doing what they're doing. They're trying to keep that window open, but it gets harder each year. But for the Predators in the sort of the retool as you go, they've done a good job over time of stacking, because the Milwaukee group is there's a lot of promise there.
Yep.
Kemmel and Svechkov and Afanasyev and those guys are doing well right now. Those guys haven't even scratched the surface of doing anything here yet, but those days are coming in the next few years.
Preds in action tonight at 7 o'clock at Bridgestone Arena. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman and Company is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the chase for the cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.